So I thought today I'd bring up a topic that I know I haven't addressed in a while, but it's a perspective. This would be the title of my sermon today, Perspectives on the Sabbath Day. All of us here pretty much know that there is a Sabbath day, and just in case I run short, this is about half my notes on the Sabbath day. So there's so much that's collected over the years, and I thought, well, we all know about the Sabbath day. In fact, I was going back, and I didn't take a look at this, but I still have the article. It's called Testing the Faith. This is from 2001. It was by a man named Joe Kovacs. And he talks about a man named Jan Marcus, and he was a Seventh-day Adventist pastor in Illinois. It says that he is starting with $50,000 of his own. I think he went up to $100,000 or even $1 million if people could prove that in the Bible that the Sabbath was changed to Sunday. So no one ever won that, because if you ever take a look at that, there's nowhere in there that you can prove that. I'm not going to spend my time today, but there are a couple of scriptures that people take to say, well, look, that's why it went from Saturday to Sunday, but no one can ever acknowledge that. Basically, what it's done, and this is from some archbishops and others from the Catholic Church, they will recognize that, by the way, anybody that will keep Sunday now acknowledges the authority of the Catholic Church to change the day. So they will even say that the day was changed, that the Sabbath is definitely the Sabbath, but because they've got the keys to the kingdom of heaven, that they've got the ability to change that day. Obviously, that's disputed, but they say that anyone that acknowledges that simply acknowledges the authority of the Mother Church. So anyone else that would have their own ideas may go to Revelation, to where it talks about the Lord's Day, and they use one scripture like that to say, see, that's where it changes that. You could take them back and do a bunch of research to show them that that is totally inaccurate. And all biblical scholars will say that. Even one, I think that's deceased now, I think that's Jerry Falwell, mentioned that there is no authority in the Catholic Church, but we do that. We do Sunday because that's when Christ was resurrected. We know Christ wasn't resurrected on Sunday either. So that's a fallacy. So again, most of that we know, and it might be a good refresher and a good Bible study, but I'd like to talk about a perspective on this day. Since sunset began this special day, let me ask you this, because this is a challenge for all of us. Have you been able to rest? You know, I know this is a day, and occasionally we'll do pot blessing meals, and there's people out there and women that work during the week. And I know it's difficult and sometimes a bit more challenging, although you have to admit it is different from the time that the three angelic beings, including Christ himself, came before Abraham, and Abraham said, kill the fatted calf. That had to be a major undertaking. They did get fresh meat, there was no doubt about that, but there was a lot of work and preparation. Nowadays, we can do, as my wife did yesterday, fill some food in a crock pot, turn it on, and let it do its job. So we've got crock pots. In other ways, we've got crock pots. So, you know, but the thing is, it's still, I realize this, it's work to do this and to bring food. So thank you for those that have done this. I know that we enjoy going out together sometimes after Sabbath services, but I also know that there's some that can't afford that all the time. So this makes it possible for all of us to get together and do this. And I know it's not the favorite, I know, of the Asheville congregation per hall, but it's nice to do it once in a while. So thanks again for making that done. But in lieu of that, I'd still like to ask, are we able to really shut down? How difficult it is to come to the Sabbath and actually go, oh, the Sabbath is here. How many times do we find ourselves trying to catch up something or doing our preparations? Do you know, during the Feast of Tabernacles, this seems to be the state of the church. And looking back to some of the things we do, I know that Mr. Dredden his arms must be sore right now after going through those four-line stanzas. I smile at that because I don't do it very often, too, so when I have to do it, I find my arms are hurting because it's been a while, so it's very interesting to go through that. We've got certain things, you know, that we do in the church, and you get to the Feast of Tabernacles, and how difficult it is to get people to sit down. Did you ever notice that? Now, for those that were in Pigeon Forge, you notice that I kind of helped find a solution for that. And we do what's called a prelude. The choir will sing a song actually before the congregation sings hymns, And so we'll do this. And I thought, well, it's a great way to start the feast. It's actually a very beautiful song. Some of the choir members had come up to me and go, can we not do this as a regular song because a lot of people can't hear it? And I told them, I said, then it wouldn't be called a prelude. It would be like a conclude. You'd have to change that. But I had mentioned to Mr. Winter, this is going to do the job of having everybody getting sitting down. Because you'll notice that the song leader will get up there and say, brethren, it's almost time. We've got a few minutes to start to take your seats, and people will carry on their conversations. And then all of a sudden, oh, we got to get going. We got to go actually find our seats. Now, where am I sitting now? And people are going, oh, that family member is sitting over there. I've got to pick up my things that I used to take these seats. It's always a challenge during the Feast of Tabernacles, isn't it? So one way I did it is I noticed, I go, let's watch what happens. And I know all the choir probably saw this. By the time we finished our prelude, everybody was sitting down because most of the people weren't used to this. And they said, what's going on here? Services are starting. We better go find our seats. So it did its job in being able to do that. But what I point that out is we are in a way creatures of habit, aren't we? And sometimes what happens, we fall out of some of the things that we could do to make the Sabbath a little bit easier and getting the rest that we need. And we have to consciously think about this in order to make the changes. Is it easy? No, because as creatures of habit, we get stuck in the same thing. And it's very hard to get out of this. So I'd like to look at this as a perspective today between you and God personally to see how you view and how you look at the Sabbath. So it goes beyond the technicalities, but it goes into a deeper level here. So there comes a time to reflect on God's purpose for this day and to examine ourselves as to our approach and thinking regarding the Sabbath. History reveals that there have always been Sabbath keepers. Yet the battle to disregard this special day has certainly taken its toll on the world. We understand that the one behind the spiritual battle has always been the prime distorter of God's laws, the one to whom the book of Revelation reveals as the devil and Satan who deceives the entire world. Revelation 12, verse 9. That's why you can even get to the basics. And when people will say to me, and you'll see the same thing, when they say, well, that's been changed. You know, I at least had one conversation with a woman that maybe I had mentioned this before. I think I remember saying this, but she was in a Dunkin' Donuts. Sometimes I would go there. I don't do that anymore because we buy Dunkin' Donuts coffee. So I just have it at home now. So I would go there to sit and just go over things, maybe to study a little bit, and I'd have a cup of coffee there. There's this woman that was up there, and she was pretty bold, I noticed, in talking to the one that was serving her. And as she came by, she kind of looked at me. We greeted each other, and I can't remember how we even got into this. But it became a view of the Sabbath day. And she had mentioned, oh, the Catholic Church reserves the right because the keys of the kingdom have been handed to us, so we reserve the right to change that day. And I said, you know, I didn't get mad. I didn't get upset. But I actually found someone that made sense in giving an answer. I understood that. Now, they're totally wrong, but at least they've got an objective on why they do what they do. To say that Revelation states that it's the Lord's Day and the Sabbath is totally a false claim. We understand that. That's a total distortion of the Scripture as well. But this one at least made sense. Because, they're misrepresenting that, but they gave a reason why they do what they do. We also give a reason why we do what we do. No one has the authority to change God's laws. We understand that. So that's simple for us. But it's not so simple for those that God has not yet called. This has been, again, a major deception upon the world today. Let's take a look at this crucial law and strengthen our foundational belief in the importance and relevance of this command. What does it mean for us today to remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy? For that, let's go to Genesis chapter 1. Once again, sometimes as we step back and not just go to pertinent scriptures referring to the Sabbath per se, but step back and look at the purpose, maybe it'll give us a different perspective on this day and how we view it, and maybe how we observe it as well. Genesis chapter 1. Now, I also have from one of the old correspondence courses, I'm not sure which one this is, but this I know it was lesson 24. So if you've got this, you'll find this chart in it. It goes over God's creation and the different things that happened on the different days. So you find here that on the first day, it says the light appeared on the earth. We know, we can look back now and recognize when you go to Isaiah, where it talks about the creation was not made in tohu and bohu, but it became this way. So from the perspective on earth, Genesis was written. So you see light appearing on the earth. God had to take all the smoke and all the vapor and clear the way. And all this, by the way, when you see this, I really like this chart, because instead of reading through all the scriptures and the additional information that's given, you can just see what happened on what day. So you can see on Sunday, the first day, light appears on the earth. We can recognize and know now that that was all cleared away, that the light had to come in. Why did that make sense for that to be done in that way? Obviously, we know that, being gardeners, and that before you could cause anything to grow, you had to have light. So he made the light to be visible on the earth. The next day, Monday, the waters were divided. It says the waters were divided. Tuesday, the dry land appears, and vegetation, it says, was created. He created vegetation. You know what's fascinating about this? And when you talk about the waters divided, we're going to go to another scripture that speaks about this and how God does this. Maybe this is a good day sometimes to think about why God does what he does and how he does what he does. You know, to be in an area like this that's just filled with such beauty, and people will come, you know, from all different parts just to come through the mountains of Asheville and other places because of its beauty. And I found out this week, maybe I had known this before, but and maybe you do too, but the leaves turn certain colors sometimes depending on how much rain comes in. You know, I can't remember what it is, but I just read an article or somebody said it, even on the weather program, it might have been that if you get more rain, it's going to turn more yellow. So you get all different colors that came about. You know, we take that for granted because God made the leaves to come on the trees. We all know what's going to happen. You're going to get these beautiful colors. God's going to cause that vegetation to fall off the tree. And instead of just laying there, it's going to become compost to all the rest of the land. This is the way that God made it, and yet we take it for granted. How did he come up with the idea, hey, let's do all these colors. Let's make the reds and the yellows. So now you see an artistic quality within God. But it all had to be designed. But the thing is, you look through the book of Genesis, and it says, dry land appears, vegetation created. What vegetation? Everything. Everything that was ever made, from the plant you see outside that window to the pine tree to the tree, everything he created. So my point is, when we get to talk to God the Father and Jesus Christ, maybe we'll find out that within any time frame that we could think of, within the time frame of a spiritual realm, there was planning that was done and how this was all going to be done. And it had to take an element of time. Now, how did they come up with these ideas? Were they spontaneous? Were they right there because God was God? You see, there's so much more into this than sometimes what we read. Wednesday, it says the sun, moon, and stars become visible. Thursday, the sea life and birds were created. Here is another great aspect of God's creation. On Friday, the land animals and man was created. And on Sabbath, the Sabbath was made. By what? How do you make the Sabbath? Imagine that plan. Here we're going to do all this, and then we're going to come to the Sabbath. What do you want to do? Nothing. Let's do nothing. Now, is that what we really do? You know, the Sabbath is obviously a day that we do nothing, but it's ceasing from what he did on the other 6 days. We've created on these 6 days, we've done all this. Now we're not going to do anything. Sometimes I wonder how many times that we'll cease from creating and actually take a look at what we've created. Look what God says, and let's take a look in Genesis here. I want you to see how fast you can come up with something that these verses have in common. Maybe you can nod your head or whatever to show I got it. Verse 4, God saw the light that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. Verse 10, God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas, and God saw that it was good. Verse 12, the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, the tree that yields fruit, and seed itself is according, and God saw that it was good. What are you picking up on? I think you got it already, don't you? You know, it reflects on that in verse 18, verse 21, verse 25, and when you get to verse 31, verse 31, God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. And so ended the days of creation. You know what sometimes we miss out on? We go so fast in everything that we do, including Thanksgiving coming up. Now, maybe some do this, but I know the women and the men will help too. But the women put this all on. We've already ordered our organic turkey. All these things we do differently and so many times on Thanksgiving, don't we? Whether you get organic turkey or not, we just decided to go organic this year. All turkey is basically organic, I guess, but it's organic in a different way. So anyway, but you're going to get typically, you'll have your green beans, you'll have your cranberry sauce, you'll have, you know, your sweet potatoes, your whatever it is, how traditionally most have kept a Thanksgiving. And all this work that's already starting to be planned out even now, it's all out there at Walmart and Kroger's. I already see the stuff out there that's for Thanksgiving. And you put all this work in. And you put it there. There it is on the table. We all sit down, say the prayer. Pow, zoom, it's gone. And the guys are going to watch in the football game. It's gone that fast. All that work that you put into it, and it's gone. Did we ever stop and go, it is good. It's really good. Maybe sometimes we should just stand around. Let's all stand around. We're not going to eat for another 10 minutes. We're just going to look at this and what's been prepared and look at all this food that we have. But we're so used to in this society, bam, 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 and it's over with. How many men have ever cut the grass? Did you ever cut the grass and just go, cut the grass, now it's on to something else? I like to go out there and just sit for a while and just take a look at it and go, you know, it's good. Do you ever notice how nice a lawn looks after it's cut? Maybe you went to the trouble of doing the edging too and just made it extra special. And you stand back and go, that's really nice. That's what God did. Why in the world would we feel guilty about it? He did that on every day he created. He stopped at the end of the day. And he said, stop. Time to stop working. What's happened in our society? We keep going and going and going and going and going. What forces us to stop? Well, sometimes we get sick. We see there's got to be a balance in here. God reflected on the work that he had done. So I would say in the same perspective, if we want to be like God, that's what we should be doing. So my question is today, yes, we understand about keeping the Sabbath day. How do we keep it? Are we so busy within all the things that we're too busy to stop? Or do we wait till the last minute to really start our preparations? Really, when you think about it, the starting point for the next Sabbath should be after sundown today. Maybe we can take a look at this and go, you know, we are going to change a few things. Because we've gotten maybe a little bit sloppy here and there. And yeah, we're waiting up till Friday to get things done. And maybe I could start doing something on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday or whatever it might be to start to prepare a little bit more. So I'm not such a big rush because this world pushes us this way. And we've got to fight back against that. So again, this is a personal perspective that we all need to really take a look at. Genesis 2 verse 1 says, thus the heavens and the earth were finished and the host of them. And on the seventh day, God ceased his work, which he had made, and he rested. Now, we already know that the arm work didn't get tired. He didn't go, you know, I couldn't imagine him and Jesus Christ going, trying to catch their breath from all that they had done. You know, so it's not the rest that normally we would have, but he ceased from his work, which he had made. He didn't work anymore. On the seventh day, from all his work, which he had made. It's interesting to note here the word here for rested. He rested comes from the Hebrew word Shabbat, Shabbath. This comes from the Hebrew word 7676, meaning pretty much intermission. And we've heard that we're having intermission now. So there was a stoppage of time. It's really close to the Sabbath here when you look, because Sabbath is the word that comes from 7673. It's very close to the 7676. So they're very close together. There was an intermission. There was a stoppage. And so God blessed the seventh day, and he set it apart, because in that he rested from all his work which God created and made. What we can receive from these verses is something that we may be overlooking in our lives today. When do we really cease from our work? Do we really take a look or regard our labor? Are we able to say and fill the name in? And Bill saw that it was very good. He looked at the work that he did and saw that it was very good. Doesn't matter what it is. Maybe you had to fill out reports. Whatever it might be. And he saw the work that he was done, because shouldn't we be shooting for excellence in everything that we do, in all that we do? He saw the work that he had done. I don't care if it's a brake job on the car. He saw what he did, and it was very good. We get satisfaction out of the labor that we have. That's what God expects us to have. It's interesting, as we go to the book of Job, the book of Job 38, here, Job had an intermission, a stoppage of play. And he wasn't feeling too good. And it comes up to this last chapter, and God reveals something about his creation that sometimes we overlook. Can we imagine sometimes, I don't know if I could imagine the pain and suffering that Job had to endure at that time, but he was all ears before God at this point. Job 38, verse 1, the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man. I'm going to question you and you will answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth?" Very interesting. Why would God say that? Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Because we wouldn't even look at it that way. What do you mean foundations of the earth? What, is somebody pouring a slab here? No, that's not the case, but that's God did something to make that earth to set the way that it did. Our perspective, again, we just take it for granted because it's always been there. That's what it does. And sometimes we'll see maybe different things from science and the things that if they learned that if the earth was tilted a little bit more, things would be out of kilter. If it was that much closer to the sun, people would be scorched. It's perfect exactly where it is. He created every planet to be put exactly where he wants it to be in its order. We just look at it, though, and take it for granted. Unless, again, sometimes we do something that has to do with science to go, "Wow, look at that. I never recognized it that way." So he's questioning, where were you when I did this? Tell me if you have understanding. Who measured, who determined its measurements? Do we ever take that for granted? Who determined the circumference of the earth, how big it would be, that it would be round, that it would go that way in orbit like it does? Who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened or laid its cornerstone? And Job would be going, "I never thought of that." Did Job at the time know about how the planets and the orbits were? Maybe he did. Maybe God revealed and showed him. Maybe they knew some of that those things at the time, because God would certainly be wasting his time, wouldn't he, if Job really didn't understand certain aspects. Or laid its cornerstone, when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Do you know what that says too? There was a time when these things were made and the angels were so joyful. They were filled in on what God was doing and the process that was taking place, because there was going to be a creation, and now God finished it, and it says the angels sang and shouted for joy. Can we even grab that concept of how they looked at it? Or do we just read through another scripture and it becomes empty? There was joy there because of what was done. This is what God said. Or who shut in the sea with doors? I love this part now, because we look at the sea. You know, you look at the ocean and it comes up on the shore and that goes back. You know what God says in the scripture? He says, "You know, I set the boundaries." He told the sea, "That's as far as you go. That's it. No farther. This is the barriers that I'm putting up." And so we just look at the Atlantic and Pacific, and we look at Lake Erie and all those as, well, the waters are there, but God created boundaries. He says, you know, you're not going to take over the whole earth. It's going to stop right here. And this is how he puts it. When it burst forth and issued from the womb, when I made the clouds its garments, the thick darkness its swaddling band, when I fixed my limit for it, set bars and doors, when I said, this far you may come, but that's it, and here your proud waves must stop. So interesting how God worded this in such an almost poetic type way. So see, here's another concept of God that we can stop and understand. We do poetry. You know, we do these kinds of sayings and things. This is what God did to express what he had done. Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place? When you start to think about this stuff, it starts to put you in your place. If God would just say, where were you when I made all this, by the way? Mankind runs around like he owns everything. You know, you get nations that feel, this is mine. This is our boundaries. This is my country right here. That's it. God says, that's not your country. It's what I gave to you. It's mine, he says. That belongs to me. Where were you when I made all this stuff? So it tends to put you back in a humble type way, which it obviously had the impact on Job to be able to do that. But more than that, it shows the way it goes beyond Genesis and just a physical type creation. This was well thought out by God and Jesus Christ before it even took place. He said, verse 16, have you entered the springs of the sea? Have you walked in search of the depths? Have the gates of death been revealed to you? Do you grab that concept? Have you comprehended the breadth of the earth? Tell me if you know all this. Where is the way to the dwelling of light and darkness? Where is its place that you may take its territory, that it may know the paths of its home? I smile at that sometimes because we look out in the outer space and I keep seeing this, not all the time, but it was pointed out. Somebody would say, well, there's a black hole. And I keep going, maybe that's the case. But I keep going, would you go out there and stick your arm down there? How do you know that there's some kind of black? And what is it? Well, it's the absence of this. And they put all these things together. Then you find out later on they're full of baloney. You know, God made all this. Maybe something's different out there, but how many truly comprehend how he made space? And I know, by the way, that mankind's come up with lots of different ideas and subjectivity in order to continue to get funding. Because if you build Hubble and you don't find anything, you're not going to get funded anymore. And I was on an archaeological program that if you didn't find something, they're not going to be funded for an archaeological program. You didn't find anything. Why should I continue to fund it? And certainly enough, on the last day of my archaeological dig, we found something. And I always put in magazines, and I'm kind of going, really? I kind of saw that there the first day. It was very interesting. It was called the oldest Israelite house, and it's just like a piece of dirt. I'm kind of going, really? And it kind of puts a perspective on what I was told about that. So you can see research and development, it's not always as honest as it comes across to be once you examine it. And again, we've seen this for years in so many different things, in so many ways. But again, this is God who made this creation here. Look at it says in verse 22 how he puts this. Have you entered the treasury of snow? I look at the treasury of snow and smile at that because I know that I had a friend that was standing under a pine tree and I gave him a deposit. Because you know what happens for those that have done this? That's all you kind of got to do is go bang against the trunk of that tree and it dumps its deposit. You know, bam, right on the head. And it's so funny to watch that. And if it happens to you, it's happened to me too. It doesn't hurt anything. But it's just how he puts this. Have you seen the treasury of hail, which I have reserved for the time of trouble? He caused that hail to come down as punishment in many cases for the day of battle and war. Or by the way the light is diffused, or the east wind scattered over the earth, who has divided a channel for the overflowing water, or a path for the thunderbolt. Look what he points out here in all of his creation. That's not really pointed out in Genesis, but he even goes farther with the thunderstorms and things of that nature. To cause it to rain on a land where there is no one, a wilderness which there is no man, to satisfy the desolate waste and cause the spring to spring forth the growth of tender grass. Did you ever watch the one, everybody's probably had to see this, I believe it was the Serengeti, to where there's this chain of events that take place, and you get the animals that come through, and it'll be so lush and so green for a while, and then the dry spell ends, and some of the animals die because they can't find any more water, and the springs dry up, and where there used to be a lake bed, it's all cracked, there's nothing. And then all of a sudden, you think everything's dead here, and then water comes through, and all of a sudden, these things start popping in out of the ground, because they went down into the mud, and it was almost like a hibernation. And this is all what God made. We take this for granted. And the cycle goes over because God said, you know, I created my creation to feed what I have made and to plant what I had planted. And so you can see the events that take place that God put in order. And then he goes beyond this. He speaks of the ice. Verse 29, from whose womb comes the ice? And the frost of heaven, who gives it birth? The waters harden like stone, and the surface of the deep is frozen. He says, can you bind the cluster of Pleiades? So he saw the galaxies. This is not man's coming up with something. Even he could name the clusters of the galaxies that we look out on today. Or loose the belt of Orion. Wow, this was mentioned. We still see. I remember looking up, I don't know the stars that well, but I certainly know Orion, and I know where that belt is. And I know I see that dipping cup sometimes. Don't you? You know, it's so interesting that that's something, I think about that sometimes, I go, you know, David looked at that, Abraham looked at that. They all looked at that. In fact, we're probably drinking the same water. I've wondered at times, is there really any new water? God says, we're going to have to make some more water. They're running out there. He made the creation to recycle it. It goes back up in the cleansing process. And he doesn't use aquapure. You know, think about that, how he does this. Can you guide the great bear with its cubs? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you set their dominion up of the earth? So he goes all these things and providing for the food. Verse 39, can you hunt the prey for the lion or satisfy the appetite of the young lions? And Job's sitting there listening. Never thought about that. You know why? I was too busy. I was too busy doing my stuff. Now again, we know that Job was a righteous man that gave his sacrifices, but even then, he took a righteous man and made him better. He's taking his people, his righteous people, and making them better. But it can only come if we stop and use the Sabbath day as a time to reflect, not a time where we've got to keep, oh, it's busy, I've got to do this, I've got to go do this, I've got to get this done. What is our Sabbath like? Sometimes it may take a little bit more preparation. Now, I've got an article here from a different perspective. It's a long one. I want to just try to take some perspectives out of this, but it's perspective of somebody that doesn't really understand and know the Sabbath at all. But she brings out points that give us something to think about. This is dated, actually, March 2nd, 2003. And it's titled Bring Back the Sabbath by Judith Shulevitz. She starts here by saying, Sandor Ferenczi, a disciple of Freud's, once identified a disorder he called Sunday neurosis. Every Sunday, or in the case of a Jewish patient, Saturday, the Sunday neurotic developed a headache or a stomachache or an attack of depression. After ruling out purely physiological causes, including the rich food served at Sunday dinners, which they did back then, Ferenczi figured out what was bothering his patients. They were suffering from the Sabbath. On that weekly holiday observed by all present-day civilized humanity, it speaks of Ferenczi was writing this, his diagnosis here, 1919, when Sunday was still sacred, even in Budapest, he says, not only did drudgery give way to festivity, family gatherings, and occasional worship, but the machinery of self-censorship shut down too, stilling the eternal inner murmur of self-reproach. The Sunday neurotic, rather than enjoying his respite, became distraught. He feared that impulses repressed only with great effort might be unleashed. He induced pain or mental anguish to preempt the feeling of being out of control. Let me explain this. The way she writes here is a little bit difficult. What's being said here is all of a sudden you get to the Sabbath and people are kind of like, what do I do? I've got to actually fellowship with people. I've got to talk with people. I've got to actually consider not doing something. I don't know how to do this. Because we find ourselves sometimes like this, and it's very hard to shut down. For people that you would be toward what's called, this is where this gets to, workaholic stage. And I find myself experience this. I'll sit down and have a conversation, and my foot starts going. My hand starts tapping. And it's almost like, I've got to do something. I don't feel good by sitting down and doing anything. I feel I'm not being productive. How many have experienced that and felt that? That can transfer over into the Sabbath day as well. She continues, she says, about a decade ago, I developed a full-blown weekend disorder of my own. Perhaps because I am Jewish, it came on Friday nights. My mood would darken until by Saturday afternoon, I'd be unresponsive and morose. By the way, I'm not saying that I would hope that none of us would be to this spot. I do think we have a different outlook on the Sabbath, that we all look forward to it, but there are still pieces in here that may be able to apply in our perspective. She was not even used to keeping a Sabbath. We are. We've done this. We've taken a look at this, but I'd like to take it another element deeper, and the way to do this is to examine the way this woman has looked at it. She said, my mood would darken until by Saturday afternoon, I'd be unresponsive and morose. My normal routine, which involved brunch with friends and swapping tales of misadventure and the relentless quest for romance and professional success, made me feel impossibly restless. I started spending Saturdays by myself. After a while, I got lonely and did something that as a teenager, profoundly put off by her religious education, I could never imagine wanting to do. I've been dropping in on a nearby synagogue. She mentioned the type of building that it was. I won't go into this, but she says, I sat in the back of this sanctuary and discovered that I had no interest in praying, which I hardly remember how to do. So you see, again, my point is here, what do you think we're going to have to teach people in the millennium? They might hear about a Sabbath day, but they have no idea. And some of us might remember that. I certainly do, because I did find out that the Sabbath day was the day, and this is a wow effect on somebody that's been keeping Sabbath for 14 years. Wow, I never looked at it that way. God opens up your mind and see that, but you know, then I'd be coming to Sabbath services and cutting grass. I had a paper route, and through that paper route, I got people that would want me to come and cut their lawns. So I was able to make some extra money. So before I went to church, I cut grass. But hey, I had the right day. I had no idea. What a very interesting perspective is that you've got, by the way, you can't work. I can't work? Okay, now I got that one. Now there's an entire different perspective that God's people have had to go through. Because now the Sabbath became one of those things that almost became Talmudic. And the church had to go through that stage. Now it became, you can't do that, and 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 you can't do that. And if that's what we taught our children, then we did something wrong. Because our perspective was, you can't, you can't, you can't. Not what you can, you can, you can. Here's what you can do. God designed it. When he finished creating, he looked at it and he said, it was good. For somebody to look at the Sabbath day and go, it's not good, whose thinking is off base? Isn't that interesting? It was our whole perspective. So we started making our own rules, just like they did within the Talmud of the Jewish time. You can't lift this. You can't start a fire. And we've had that same thing that we go through in the church all the time. It's back and forth here. You either do too much or say, well, I can do this. You know, there's nothing wrong with me going to a baseball game because I can think of God in the bleachers. Yeah, that really makes sense. And here's a long ball. Oh, God, are you going to catch it? I mean, we saw angels in the outfield. I mean, you can kind of put those together. And there had to come a reality, what does God expect of us? And to each of us, by the way, it becomes a very personal thing on what you might do and what you might not do on the Sabbath. So God opens up the door sometimes for us to decide. It has to become a personal perspective out of respect and maybe what we can do, maybe what we're able to do. many of those things. She says, it was only much later, after I joined the synagogue and changed my life in a million other unforeseen ways, that I developed a theory about my condition. She said, if Ferenczi's patients had suffered from the Sabbath, I was suffering from the lack thereof. In the Darwinian world of New York, 20-something, everything, even socializing, reading, or exercising, felt like work or the pursuit of work by other means. Had I been able to consult Ferenczi, she said, I believe he would have told me that I was experiencing the painful inklings of sanity. That actually there was a time to stop and rest. But because of what society did, it becomes all out of kilter. She said, for the 84 years since Ferenczi identified his syndrome, which bears a striking resemblance to what is now called workaholism, it has become the norm, and the Sabbath, the one day in seven dedicated to rest by divine command, has become the holiday Americans are most likely to never take. Now, for those, again, that might not have been in the church, I've experienced this. Because every Sunday, I went to church. I went to church. It didn't matter. If I had a hockey game that I played and it conflicted with the timing of my church, my dad would take me to another Lutheran church. And I would go to that one early. And I remember, even on the way from the church, we'd have to go through the service and get out really quick. And on the way, I was putting on my equipment in the car. So I could hop out of the car, simply put my skates on, and go right out on the ice. That's how But I didn't miss my Sunday. I didn't miss that. Now, there were other elements of it as well. So, I mean, you can see in a perspective of how many Americans, I'm not even saying that every Lutheran looked at it that way. That's simply how we did it. But I do know this, there were times when we would come home from church and Mom would go to the later morning church because sometimes she sang solos or something like that, so she would go to the next one. Dad would take us three, the kids, and we'd clean the house. We'd vacuum, clean up everything, get everything in order, then he'd take us for a bike ride. Oh, there you go. That was a nice thing to do. We have great memories of that. But we cleaned that house. Had no idea of what God really wanted. And it was always there. We had a big family Bible on the table. It was always there, just never saw it. Then you come into the real truth and you find out about the Sabbath day. And then you find out years later, maybe my perspective is missing a little bit because of what this world is catching us up in. Look what happens sometimes. It can be startling, she says, to realize just how integral the Sabbath once was to American time. When we tell our children stories about the first pilgrims landing on our shores, we talk rather vaguely about their quest for religious freedom. We leave out that this freedom was needed in large part so that the Puritans could obey the fourth commandment, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, with a zealotry that had deeply alienated their countrymen back home. We have all heard of the Puritan blue laws named supposedly for the color of paper they were printed on, and some of us will say it doesn't make sense today. Some states and some counties still have those blue laws today where on Sunday you can't buy alcohol until after 12, and I'm kind of thinking, what difference does it make? What real difference does it make? But these were the laws put in force by those that, again, had this idea of the Sabbath day and missing the entire point, sometimes missing the entire day. We have all heard of the Puritan blue laws, named supposedly for the color of paper they were printed on. They required attendance at church but punished anyone who got there with unseemly haste or too showy on a horse. They forbade unnecessary visiting, except in emergencies, and smoking and sports. You couldn't eat, if you were gone from your wife for 3 years, it says at least one documented instance, the lewd and unseemly behavior of kissing your wife on your doorstep upon returning home from a journey of 3 years was punished by a spell in the stocks. From Saturday to Sunset Sunday, the most pious Sabbatarians, usually clergymen, wouldn't shave, have their rooms swept or beds made or allow food to be prepared or dishes washed. They ate only what had to been cooked in advance and devoted all time not spent in church to reading Scripture. Now, what would happen if we taught our children that? No, can't do anything. Can we visit Grandma and Grandpa? Now, that's another thing we would do on Sunday. It was family time, so I was taught some good things. We would get together with my grandparents and have great family time. Those are great memories that we had. But again, we had to tweak in that way because you know that some people that we fellowshipped with in the church, because I remember I was told this by someone I went to college with. He goes, I'll never do that without what was done to me. I'll never allow my kids not to play basketball on Saturday. So he looked at, this is the way the look became. The Sabbath became what was called a burden. And I go back to Genesis 1, I go, then it wouldn't be good, would it? So who lost the perspective? Did anything really change? Again, as she's saying this, we go back into some of these things that have transpired in the past to see some of the things that have taken place. They knew about a certain day, and all of a sudden put all these rules on it. It's been the case for years. They missed the entire point. She says, even after Puritanism lost its hold on American culture, the American Sunday was observed with unusual strictness. In 1831, Alexis de Tocqueville observed with some surprise that few Americans were permitted to go on a hunt, to dance, or even to play an instrument on, as some do today. You don't play music. You don't play instruments. That's still done with some groups today. Others, by the way, take it to the other extreme. It's total rock and roll. I mean, that's what you get. They come to church because if you're not going to get the sermon, you're going to get some music, and it's going to be complete with and I've seen all. I've been already addressed here. Here's a Christian rock group. I go, really? Let me see. And on the front, the four guys that are there, and they're like, I'm kind of going, Christian rock group. You'd think there would be smiles or something like that, and then you listen to the music and. You know, it's something that really wouldn't be played necessarily on the Sabbath. And again, we've got to be very careful sometimes in judgment of that because of what some of our ideas may be to music. We've always tended to be in the more conservative. We've broadened a little bit, and it's very difficult sometimes, even with church hymns sometimes. The one that we sang, by the way, from Ross Judson, who's not in the church anymore, wrote a lot of those songs, you know, that we sing. In fact, I was thinking of the one, Ambassadors for Jesus Christ, because I was thinking, okay, someone asked me about did I miss the University of Tennessee traffic. I go, well, we're on the east side already, so I wouldn't have hit it anyway. I go, oh, that's right, there's a football game going on today, which I hope that Tennessee wins. Why? Because Knoxville will be happy. That's it. That's it. I want them to win because people in Knoxville will smile and be much happier. That's the point there. But I also thought, oh, you know something? We could march down there with our theme song, Ambassadors for Jesus Christ, you know, with that kind of thing. That's like a theme song for Christians almost, but, you know, some would say, well, it wasn't written really by a church member. You know, there's a lot of fine music that's out there, by the way, that's good, that's uplifting, as many of you know, that's good to be listened to, even on the Sabbath day. So we've had, again, but we've had to cut through that. We've had to get through that type of thing as well. She continues here, as she says, as recently as 125 years ago, you would have been hard-pressed to find a museum or a library open on Sunday. 80 years ago, football was considered too vulgar to be played on Sunday. Now, I think it starts, well, at least the NFL beginning thing starts at like 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning. I mean, you're going to have football Sunday. Football Sunday night. Football Monday night. Football Thursday night. I mean, look where it's come. And this was once considered to be too vulgar. Oldsters remember standing in line at the bank on Fridays to get cash for the weekend. I don't like to look at oldsters because you call me old. I'll just go, does anybody remember that? I don't remember that one, but this is what happened. Youngsters can assume that they can withdraw at will, which you go anywhere now and get your money out. Any time, 24 hours a day. Anyone older than 30 can remember living with the expectation that most stores would be closed on Sunday. The expectation now is that they will be open, and we're miffed when they're not. Isn't that interesting? Some still may close. No. The Lonely Days Were Sundays is the title of a book about growing up Jewish in the church going south. The Lonely Sunday has been replaced by the overscheduled Sunday. Soccer Sunday, Little League Sunday, Yoga Class Sunday, Ketchup Around the House Sunday. Americans still go to church, of course, but only between chores, sporting events, and shopping expeditions. You can now find ATM machines inside megachurches. Congregants don't want to waste a minute between services in the mall. Isn't it interesting? You'll also find yoga classes and maybe swimming pools in your megachurches. Hey, how would you like that? What a way to get more people to come to church. Let's get a workout room. Well, no, then we definitely wouldn't have anybody come. So the eclipse of the Sabbath is just one small part of the larger erosion of social time with its formally agreed upon rhythms of labor and repose. After hours has become a strictly personal concept since the 24-hour convenience store, gas station, pharmacy, supermarket, movie theater, diner, factory, and bar allow us to work, shop, dine, and be entertained any time of the day or night. We greet each shift of an activity from weekday to evening or weekend as proof of American cultural superiority. We knock over the barriers between us and the perpetual motion machine that is the marketplace with the glee you might expect of insomniacs who have been chained for too long to their beds. You know, it goes on for a long time. It talks about some of the problems, again, that have taken place in the past, how this has shifted one place to another. But this is where we're at now. We're at a time when we're filled with in a world that you and I come here and people are going, like, do you think that's not going to affect us somehow? People are going like crazy. It's hard to pull back from that. Thankfully, God has given us a place here to where I can look out the window. I just saw one car go by, but you're not going to see many of them. So we're in a very peaceful place, which thanks to God that we are. So we can at least get some of that perspective. I've shared with you that what a beautiful place to go over to look at these beautiful mountains in God's creation. Yeah, I still got to deal with those semis, but that's what it does. It never stops, does it? Do you think that cannot have an effect on us? She says in the last pages here, do I think everyone else should observe a Sabbath? I believe it would be good for them and even better for me, since the more widespread the ritual, the more likely I am to observe it. It's much easier to keep the Sabbath, for instance, when your family does too, though getting children to agree to do anything their friends don't do may prove insurmountable. This shows a problem and a problem that we've had to deal with. And when it comes to teaching our children diligently, this is the one thing that if we cannot give our children a picture that they've got something so much better than what we've got now, then we're failing in being able to convey that vision to them. If they're still looking at it, which is difficult, I'm not saying it's not, because all their friends, hey, they skate, they do this on the Sabbath, and we've got to sit down with them and say, let me ask you, what's the value of your trophies or these certificates or your ribbons? Mine are all in boxes now. They mean nothing, because if I pull them out, they're just going to collect dust or fall on the ground and break. They're only memories now. That's it. So we went to a tournament and we won the tournament. How did that make someone a better person? But maybe an ego trip that, well, I did this and I won that. So what? Because how many can remember who won the Super Bowl 4 years ago? So what? Those guys have come and they've gone. And unless they did something different from their lives, winning a Super Bowl didn't advance or make mankind any better. It just entertained them. So that's what we get in entertainment society, and these are the things that we've had to deal with. Are we able, actually, to stop? Because nowadays, the kids, if they don't have something in their hands to push buttons or to do something, I got to have something. I got to have some kind of social media. Can they even sit down? Can we even sit down? And not text or not go to Facebook or not get on some. This is what we're faced with. And it can affect even our very own Sabbath day and our connection with God and being able to sit down like God had with Job and say, have you not considered? I will after I contact my friends, after I do my social networking. So it becomes very difficult because we don't want to get to the point where we become Talmudic. And it becomes such a thing of this is what you can't do and you cannot do that. You know, there were times I know in the ministry, this is different for us because, yes, we do have to work. It's still my favorite day of the week because it entails stopping everything else. I would come anyway. We've had song leaders that would come anyway. We have speakers that will come. And so I'm going to be here anyway. So we do these things, but there were times I would get to Friday. And for some of you, maybe it's nice to share these things because I love ideas, maybe on the way that you've approached the Sabbath day. Some have done a lot of different things, which has been so wonderful. They've made that Friday evening, you know, for years in my family, every evening, weekdays, my family ate together. That blows my mind. How do we even do that? How does that happen? Because this society has certainly changed. How did my family even get the time to sit together at a meal? But we did. And we didn't have the special one, though. I didn't have a special Friday night meal or a Saturday night meal. I cannot remember that being there. But I remember coming into the church, I started seeing something different. Now, some people carried the rituals maybe way too far. And some that I've seen have done that the Jewish-type traditionalism, that's why we are asked why we don't do this. I said, because we're not Jewish. We don't keep Hanukkah because we're not Jewish. You know, it's not our tradition. We do Thanksgiving because it's an American tradition. We do 4th of July because it's an American tradition. So, but it's not necessarily with candlelight and things of that nature. But on Friday night, some of you have done that. Maybe a special meal. Maybe the candle comes out, which is a fine thing to do. So you've incorporated something special about that evening. But I know coming in from Friday, from maybe some visiting or other things that I've had to wrap up on before I come into the Sabbath, I found myself exhausted. I'm tired. Now I've got my children. What do I do? Because it's so hard. Now I got to sit down and open up and do a Bible study, and I'm exhausted. And I've got to prepare for finish preparing for the next day. So what I found to do is I would sit down and I would put in maybe a Bible video. And I found out that there are some really good Bible videos out there. Oh, they're not perfect by any means. In fact, we sat down for a little while last night because I bought the church here, out of some of the extra budget that we had, a bunch of Bible videos. That what's good about them, and we've already gone through Joseph and Jacob, and they're excellent to be able to talk about. By the way, don't forget, there's an understanding there that we don't have. And the great thing about that is when something doesn't go exactly right or that's not the way it is, it gives you a conversation piece to talk about. By the way, the scripture says over here that thus and such is. We're noticing and looking at the book of John. In the other books that refer to Jesus, he didn't have to have the long hair. This one in John has the hair down to the shoulders. So if you're going to be offended by that, then don't watch it. But that's how the world has portrayed it. But there's still good things you can use that as a topic to talk about. By the way, did you know that they didn't have long hair? What a great opening to be able to teach our children about that. This is what you're going to see. Because I grew up with the aspect, we had our Jesus picture on the wall. He had long hair. He was almost like effeminate type looking. He had the beard though. But that's the way he was portrayed, gaunt. And that's not the Jesus that I want to know. That portrays him maybe with a drop of blood coming down from a crown of thorns that was jabbed on his skull that no doubt created massive bleeding. There was so much more than that to realize he was a strong man because he was a carpenter. He was no wimp at all. So look at the impression that's given. These can be seen to look at and talk about. But it's something that I know in watching the book of Acts, which I used to watch with my youngest son. Every Friday we'd sit down and go, let's go. He probably knows Acts from beginning to end because it goes word for word. It's word for word through Acts. Now, the only problem is it is the NIV. But it gives you something else to talk about. You've got to watch, did that really happen? And sometimes they've got really good actors. I don't want to be advertising this necessarily in a sermon. I'm just trying to give somebody ideas. They've got good actors, like James Brolin is in one. Ben Kingsley is in Joseph. He plays Potiphar. So they're relatively good actors. But I noticed in one where James Brolin plays Peter. And it's kind of when he gets out of prison, the chains drop off of him, and he kind of goes up the aisle, and he kind of goes, yeah, woo-hoo-hoo. I go, that's not Peter. Peter did yee-haws. You know, he was really whipping it out. So sometimes you can see it's a little bit underplayed, or it's overplayed, as the case of Charlton Heston and Moses. My people! You know, emoting, things of that nature. Let's get down and think of the way it is. See what I mean? If we're able to talk to our kids and others, and bring a reality to what the Bible says. And if they can see that, then they're going to be able to see the reality of the Sabbath day and why God made it to be so. And yeah, folks, by the way, Mom and Dad, we get caught up too quick sometimes in our own things. And guess what? We're going to pull it back. Let's all work together as a team so we can be more ready for this coming Friday night and maybe look at it from a little bit different of a perspective. So she ends here. I just wanted to finish here. She quotes two rabbis. Rabbi Judah Lowe of Prague, best known for his Tales of the Golem, it's called, pointed out that the story of creation was written in such a way that each day, each new creation is seen as a step toward completion that occurred on the Sabbath. That's the way that I brought it up, that the light was made. There had to be a progressive way on things were done, because when he made the vegetation, there was going to be rain and there was going to be sunshine to feed it. You know, some will say, well, it wasn't a literal six-day creation. Doesn't say that, but it sure makes sense. And God could certainly make it that day because it was done in a way that there was order, that there was a bounds of the ocean, so it couldn't come up upon the land and wash all the dirt away. He made it in such a way that made sense. So I'll believe it the way it says it, and if God shows us different, it'll be in the future. But it does show a pattern. What was the creation's climatic culmination? The act of stopping. Why should God have considered it so important to stop? Rabbi Elijah of Vilna put it this way. God stopped to show us that what we create becomes meaningful to us only once we stop creating it and start to think about why we did so. The implication is clear. We would let the world wind us up and then set us marching like mechanical dolls that go and go until they fall over because they don't have a mechanism that allows them to pause. But that would make us stop less than human. We have to remember to stop because we have to stop to remember. I thought those were very interesting insights from some people that don't even know about the implications necessarily about the Sabbath day, but they see a certain value. And they've seen a certain amount of people that have implied so many rules on it that it's alienated people. Or the other side, to where it just becomes a casual thing. See, people will say, well, if I've got time, maybe I'll take a look at it, but I just don't have time now. Well, I've got some points here today to close with, to finish with, on how we can better keep the Sabbath day holy. There's a magazine article, by the way, that goes through here, one that's from a woman named Celeste Perino Walker that talks about how to make your Sabbath special. Just let me bring out a few points here, some things that you might already do before I finish with these points. She talks about changeover signals. Within her family, she did some special things for the Sabbath. And maybe some of you, by the way, have done this. Our bed-changing day in our family was always Wednesday. I always knew I don't have to make the bed because Wednesday mom's going to take everything and go wash them. Some have done this coming up into Friday. They'll notice that the kids come in on Friday night and they've got fresh beds, and it's something she saw made a difference within her family. She called it changeover signals. She said sometimes she would put a different tablecloth that was differentiated. And some of you maybe have done that within your own dining routine. There's been something different about that. It says children can have special toys they play with only on the Sabbath and special books that they read only on the Sabbath. And this is what I've done, by the way. There was some really good Hanna-Barbera cartoon movies that I can't find online. So I'm going to try to find a way that I can get those as well. They're about a half hour. And they're great things to be able to talk about. They go back to the story of Daniel and the story of David and other things. So these are, again, things that we can use as tools that you can take a look at and find things that you can share and actually read through and find out, does this savvy with what the Bible says? Another one, she says, is an appeal to the five senses. She said, for the sense of sight, we had fresh flowers and candlelight. The sense of a touch is important, so we would give the kids back rubs as we put them to bed. Then there's the sense of hearing. On Friday night, she says, Dick and I got into the habit of playing the piano and singing after we put the family to bed. Maybe some of you have sung. I know my family and I, as we would travel 3 hours to one church, we would sing. We would find God's hymns or something else, and we would also sing together. I know our kids got a good value out of the Sabbath day, even though it was a rough one. Sometimes we would travel 3.5 hours to church one way, then 2 hours of services, 2.5 hours down to the next church, 2.5 hours, then 3.5 hours back home. That was our day. Then that we'd go over another routine the next day when I had 6 churches to serve. So when I found out, you know, you can still, is it difficult? Is it challenging? Yes. But I believe that when we put our work into it and try the best that we can, that God blesses us. and it can be different. She says, read the Bible. When reading the Bible, it's a good idea to consider the ages and spiritual maturity of the family. That's why we've tried different things. That's why we did the Hanna-Barbera cartoons when the kids were younger, and then some of the other movies, and then talk about different aspects of the Scripture, doing it that way too. She said singing. Singing can be involved in so many different ways. And then she also said nature. You know, sometimes we've gone out and we've just taken walks and found places that even on the way to certain services, if we were early, or even on the way back, we would stop at different places, a park or something, that we would go for walks. That's fine and fun to be able to do certain things like that during the Sabbath. She said journaling. Keep a written record like a diary to record your observations about the Sabbath, about God, or maybe things that God has shown you throughout the week, to stop and reflect on that. She also said a kind of thought, a neat thing. It's called a blessings box. A blessings box can be made out of any kind of box, and children should be encouraged to help in whatever way they can. She said, use a box that has a lid. Cover the bottom and top separately with wrapping paper so you can take the top off the box without ruining the wrapping. Cut a hole in the top of the box so you can put in slips of paper. You might want to purchase a special small notebook and glue it onto the side of the box so paper would always be handy. And tie a pen to the string that you can attach it so there's always a pen there. During the week, each family member who receives a blessing or an answer to prayer writes it down on a slip of paper and puts it into the blessings box. As the Friday evening meal, one person reads the slips of the paper out loud. Family members can take turns either by the Sabbath or by the slip of paper. Allow time for each discussion and praise for each blessing. God created the Sabbath for our good. He meant it to be a blessing, and it certainly is if we take the time and make the effort to do little planning and preparation. So you see, there's a lot of people out there that have some good ideas. So at least it gives us, what I'm saying, ideas. When I go to the camp meeting tomorrow, we're going to get ideas, and I love ideas. It doesn't mean that we take every idea. But I love the thought of, you know, if I want to change something, there's a multitude of different things that we're able to do. It's not regulated to one thing. And that's the way I've got to walk on the Sabbath, because that's the way it's become to some people. The Sabbath is because, oh, here's this day that I've got to be like this, and I can't really do anything. Change it up. Do something different. Make it extra special, but it takes that different work to do it. Point one, and how can I better keep this Sabbath day holy? And reflection on this. One is obviously prayer. Ask God to inspire you to new and exciting and productive ideas. James chapter 1 verse 5 says, ask for wisdom. You might not be the best. You know, it's very interesting. There are some people out there that are absolute idea people. That's what they do. They come up with ideas, and they're good with that. Some are not as good with that. Maybe you're better with implementing ideas. Ask God that He'd inspire you to look at it in a different way. The second point is prepare. Getting mentally oriented. You know, I remember in camping, when we did camping, and I'm not the avid camper, but I always forget stuff. You know, matches. Sometimes I forgot the rake. You can get a little rake, because if you're going to lay that tent down, did you ever lay down in there and all of a sudden there's this knot in your shoulder because you have a stone under there that you didn't get out or whatever? Now we've got air mattresses and things like that, but it's still nice to be able to put a bed of pine straw or whatever. You know, taking these things, I forgot a hammer, something of that nature that we forgot. You know, on the Sabbath day, it's really nice to be able to prepare like that. I remember, even though my dad wasn't in the church, when my mom left for the Sabbath day, that car was clean and it was filled up. You know, and maybe that's something that we've gotten to the habit of, that, okay, that car has got to be ready to go, and I want a clean car. That's me. I know that. I do not like it. I know my wife doesn't like that. You know, when you get kids, it may be a different story, and it's a little bit taxing. I noticed after an entire day of traveling, there might be like cheese on the back floor or something like that from eating our lunches while we're in the car. But at least we start the day out, and of course, you know, the noses and finger marks on the windows. But isn't it nice to be able to start out as you're going, that everything's clean and ready to go? Don't we encourage that for the Feast of Tabernacles, that you get your oil changes and everything prepared so we can be ready to go? We don't have to focus on the physical things. Maybe the clothes laid out. Do you know what you're going to wear? Or do you get up and all of a sudden you've got an hour left to go, I don't even know what I'm going to wear. I don't know how that's going to go. What am I going to do? Where's this stuff? Where's that stuff? I don't know how I'm going to coordinate this together. And I know for the women, sometimes you will know what you're going to wear, and then you put it on, and then you say, I don't want to wear that. And that changes. For the guys, the briefcase. I try to set my briefcase in a certain spot, have that ready to go. My Bible's in it. My church bulletin is in that. You know, my hymn book is in that. That's ready to go. I just have to put my notes in there, close it. My wife will always say, did you remember your briefcase? There was one time I didn't. And thankfully, she had my notes in her laptop thing there. So there are times that we forget things. But if we have these things laid out in order, the kids' items, if you've got kids, maybe lessons and maybe some coloring books. Oh, there's tons of things that we can access on the internet that are out there for our kids for holy days, for Sabbath days, and other things that we can do. A food prep, maybe for a Friday evening meal or a Sabbath brunch. There were times that my wife would get together. She can tell you, I really like this, but it's something you can prepare early and put it in the refrigerator. It's an egg type of dish that all you got to do is stick it in the oven. And some of you know about things that you can do that we can actually be a little bit more prepared. And we should, as best as possible, to try to prepare a little bit early. It takes a little bit of work, but to write these things down. What do we want for Friday night? I know usually for me, I like to grill because it's so simple. So if I can marinate a steak and get that ready to go, that's kind of a special thing. It's been for us. We don't do it all the time. But I know it's just so simple. Flip on the grill, you put the steak down, and you have some other side items that are ready to go. For Sabbath brunch, you know, to toast in the Sabbath day. And of all things, stop. Thank God. You know, I do think some of you probably, hopefully all of us would. Did you ever come to where you see, we don't always see the sun being able to set, but as we see, can we just stop and go, thank you, God. I got through another week. Thank you, God. You know, I know we do that as we come to the Feast of Tabernacles. Thank you, God, as we close that truck and we turn and we go to the feast. Thank you. That's a big thank you that we can get away. But we can do that once a week. That sundown comes. Thank you, God. Can we actually thank Him and be done with everyone? Or are we like the proverbial, brethren, we need to take our seats. Oh, yeah, I've got to find this and I've got to go over here and I've got to do that. It takes a little bit more preparation and inflection and thought to get into this. The third point, sometimes challenging for all of us, is make sure getting to services early enough to find suitable seating. Obviously, that's going to be a point for larger congregations. It's not that difficult to find suitable seating here. But allow time for, which we do. We've got food here early to entice people to come a little bit earlier. You know, for the restroom, for some short fellowship and preparation for any organizational responsibilities. I'm one of those, by the way, I know everyone doesn't like this. We normally try to start on time. If we don't, I don't get bent out of shape. I like to. We will always strive for that. But if it ends up going 3 minutes later, I'm not going, oh, this is the Sabbath day. Where's everyone going? So within that, we've always had starting times, which we do try to adhere to. But I don't when, as we said today, we got a little bit later of a start and appreciate a song leader being able to fill in. That was my fault there. But anyway, appreciate somebody being able to take that on and do that. Sometimes that makes that we're going to run a little bit late. But overall, we're going to be up here and the song leader will say, we're about to start. Could you start to find your seats? Of which many of us will go right over our heads. But we'll keep trying. I probably told you in Detroit we found a way to do that because Mr. Faulkner was very, very, very hard of hearing. So when he spoke really loud. And that's who they used to get everybody to sit down. Brother, can everybody sit down? And you were kind of going, well, if you didn't hear Mr. Faulkner, something was wrong. And everybody smiled, but they knew we better sit down. So we've had to find different ways to do that. The fourth point is, and this applies a lot, by the way, to the feast as well. Oh, I'm so sorry I did that. I forgot totally about that. I woke somebody up. Maybe I woke other people up too. The fourth point. Oh, so sorry. Okay. Be aware and alert to others' needs as well as your own. Let's not ever forget that, even though we're in a smaller congregation. You know, it's easy to find our own seats, but sometimes it might be others. Can I get you this? Do you need this? So we might find that sometimes in other congregations, in other places as well as our own. The fifth point. So we've got prepare, get to services early enough to find suitable seating and allow time for all these other things that we've got to do. The fourth point is be aware and alert to others' needs as well as your own. As it says in Philippians, look not on your own interests, but also it's a way for us to practice that scripture. And again, it's just something we reflect on with perspective and ask ourselves, maybe, how have I done with this? The fifth point is edify the body. Let our conversation be uplifting, positive. We can talk about world news and Christian living. We can talk about so many different things, which is fine to do. And sometimes it may take a little bit of practice. You know, sometimes we might not be the extrovert talkers, and it's a little bit more work for others. You know, we can sometimes ask, how are things been going for you? You know, Mrs. Johnson wrote me this past week, and she had mentioned within the conversation that we had that she was talking to one of the younger ones and asking them, what do you think about camp? Where did you go this year? What are your plans? What would you like to do? Sometimes it comes to a matter of questions. We can ask each other, how has your work been? You know, how have things been through your week? You know, I noticed the tendency for me would be throughout the years, somebody would go, how's it going? I remember I replied to somebody that way. How's it going? Hanging in there. Do you want to expound on that? No. Or sometimes yes. Sometimes yes. Sometimes it maybe has been a bit more difficult week. I could really use your prayers in this. You know, I'd appreciate your prayers. It's an opportunity for us to share when it says confess your faults to one another. It's not going into your book of misdeeds and telling everybody what you did wrong. But, you know, I'm having some trouble with this, and I can really use your prayers. Appreciate that. You know, to bring that closeness in, to edify the body. It's always been one thing that's been enjoyable to do. Somebody brought up it's a bit easier sometimes with an even a smaller congregation to find those better connections, but even that, it's sometimes difficult. The sixth point is glorify and revere God. Whatever you have left from the week, give it all to God. Glorify and revere God. And you know, we do that, and I noticed as we were singing today, this is a singing congregation, so I noticed singing up here, I could hear it all come from the back. It almost sounded like we were at the feast. So we sing songs, we sing out to God in respect and worship to Him. Heartfelt prayer and listening and meditation and thanksgiving. So as I spoke about these things, what would my expectation for you to be? You may look at some of the things that I've said a little bit differently than I look upon them, but it's out there to give you a perspective on, you know, look at this. Have we reflected on the Sabbath day differently? Or are we into something that we've gotten stuck in? And we're missing the whole point on what the Sabbath day is all about. Have you been renewed by a perspective on going back to the creation, on how God looked upon His Sabbath? And it takes on so much more meaning. Seventh point, remember that this is a feast day. We're going to definitely acknowledge that after this. We take that for granted. Because we are in such a blessed country. If you talk to Mr. Dave Myers in his trip over to Zambia, they have nothing like this. They have nothing like we do in the first round beforehand. There are things that they can't find at all. They scrounge for the food. We've got a real feast that we can share and enjoy the fellowship and the food together. Remember, this is a feast day. The eighth point is remember your family. Don't ever forget your family. If you've got the opportunity to teach your children or to teach your grandchildren, my children are out. I've got a lot less direct control. Now we sit down and we'll talk as adults together about different things. But I don't have the control that I had on my children. That you ought to be doing this and you ought to be doing that. Let's get together and talk about different issues. Because I would like my children to come to me when they've got issues that I can help them with, not control them with. It's different for the different children that we've got. If you've got grandchildren, sometimes that aren't even in the church, what do you say? How do you say it? That can be very tricky sometimes in how to do that. Sometimes it may just be our example or by the way that they may ask us a question. That, hey, I know that you don't observe that. Or, no, you don't observe Halloween. No, I don't. No, why? Great opening. Time to explain to them. It can still be done, especially as God gives us the blessing to be able to shine His light to our family. Remember, it says, teach them diligently. Learn to serve them first. And then point nine, thank God as the Sabbath draws to a close. Thank God as the Sabbath draws to a close. You know, one thing I'm glad that I feel this way, I don't like the Sabbath to end. I don't like it to end. And that's why most of us will like to find something to do after services, because you don't like it to end. What are you going to do, go home? Yeah, I guess I could go home. Do what? I guess wait around till it closes, then I can watch the rest of the Tennessee game. Or whatever it might be. But, you know, we all enjoy the fellowship of each other. I love doing that. You know, to find a way to really grasp and enjoy what God made this day for, and to enjoy and squeeze out every 24 hour and all these minutes and seconds that are involved in the Sabbath day, to be thankful for what He gave us this before. Thank you for causing me to stop, because if I had my way, I'd be working 7 days. And now I've got to get out of the mentality of thinking work on 7 days. I've got to be reflective on His Sabbath. Let us think about that as we go forward to remember this Sabbath day and keep it holy, to see the perspective that we've got on the Sabbath day, to keep it as God intends it, that it can be a tremendous blessing, and to also remember that a lot of people in the future will need to be taught not just about the Sabbath day, but about our perspectives. We'll be a lot more prepared to handle this if we've got the accurate perspective ourselves. Have a wonderful Sabbath.